Morning. Thanks everyone for coming. All right. So the project I'm going to be discussing is a project from a couple of years ago that we did as a community-based participatory project in Indianapolis around men who have sex with men and HIV and STI behaviors. So because context is so important when we're talking about CBPR, that's going to be a big part of the way I'm going to be describing this project. The inception of the project was based on that local CBOs were finding a higher incidence than expected of syphilis among men who had sex with men in the community, and that many of those folks were also testing positive for HIV. So an existing partnership that included the Bellflower Clinic and a number of community-based organizations in Indianapolis contacted Dr. Reese about an academic community partnership to look into this phenomenon. So what we did is, as a group, and this was a fairly long-term process, as those of you who were involved with it probably remember. So what we did is we came around a table and we spent a good amount of time talking about what it was that we actually wanted to look at and how we wanted to find out about it. Specifically, we ended up wanting to look at things like sexual behaviors, sexual partner seeking, STI and HIV diagnoses, as well as some issues around loneliness and sexual compulsivity. So when we were originally thinking about our methods of recruitment, we thought that we should definitely be building on the work that the community partners of this group were already doing. And we thought a CBPR paradigm would be especially helpful, not just because of its previous utility in HIV research, but specifically because of the context of Indiana, which I'll talk just a bit about. Now, Indiana, I think probably folks who work in any of the 50 states would say that their context is individual and specific. Indiana has that same thing. So just to explain for those of you that aren't as familiar with how resources around HIV are positioned in Indiana. It's a predominantly rural state, despite the fact that the capital, Indianapolis, is I think the eighth largest city in the country. So what you find is it's a very diffuse population in general across the state, and that Indianapolis really serves as a central site for folks to find each other. But given that, Indianapolis does not have any sort of LGBT community center or real resources outside of university settings. So IU Bloomington has an LGBT center. I'm not sure if IUPUI does, but they're associated specifically for college students. So, and the way that the city is laid out is there's no real centralization of gay community, the way that there often are in other large cities. Finally, we don't receive any Title I Ryan White CARE Act funds. And so Title I is funded to get people into primary care, but it also funds supportive services to keep people in primary care. So we theorize that one of the outcomes of this might be that some of these funds from Ryan White may serve to fund some of these cultural, social, and medical supports specifically for HIV-positive MSM. And so, therefore, kind of indirectly, Ryan White can serve to create services that are gay-specific and particularly target MSM. However, in Indiana, that is not a resource-building process that we have. So our initial recruitment plan, given how diffuse and kind of spread out and not centralized the communities were that we were hoping to be talking with, we thought we would start with respondent-driven sampling. So the idea that we would find some initial seeds, people who represented the folks that we wanted to talk to, and then we would use them as a means of trying to get deeper into the community based on their social networks, rather than sort of skimming along the top. And this has been used quite a bit with multiple what we would call hidden or harder to reach populations. So what we did is we created palm cards with a toll-free number, and we gave them to some designated seeds in the community and asked them to pass them along. And this really did not work at all. It was a complete failure, I think it's safe to say. We had fewer than five folks over the course of maybe 2 weeks call the toll-free number, and I was a master's student at the time, and we had these long extended shifts where we were supposed to sit there by the computer with the headset on waiting for folks to call, and it was incredibly frustrating. So we went back to the table and said, well, you know what, this just isn't working. So what should we do? And based on the idea that we really should have been building more on the strengths of the folks who are already doing this outreach work, we moved to a venue-based recruitment, and we switched from a research assistant administered over the phone project to a paper survey that was self-administered, and we would go out and meet men where they were. So, at the coalition table, we chose some venues in which folks were already working. And again, given the context of Indiana, they were mostly in the metro Indianapolis area because that's a kind of central point of sexual contact across the state. So the sites we ended up using were five gay bars, two bathhouses, one house ball party, and then we had some chat room recruitment through an Indiana-specific online room. So ultimately, we ended up with 504 completed self-administered surveys, about three quarters through paper-based recruitment and a quarter through the internet. So as you can see, I think that's what, a hundredfold increase in participants. So this worked much better for us. So like I was saying earlier, some of the things we looked at were orientation, age, ethnicity, education, and sexual behaviors, including where folks were looking for partners and where they found partners that they ended up being sexually active with, and then some questions about STI and HIV treatment and screening. So in terms of the men that ended up answering our survey, either through paper or the internet, they were predominantly homosexually identified. We had a pretty broad age range, which was pretty cool. So we had folks from 18 to 73, but in terms of the range of ages, it was pretty evenly split between young adulthood, middle, and later adulthood. Most of our sample was white, which in good part could be reflective of the demographics of Indianapolis in general. But it was something that was particularly noticeable that so many of our sample identified as white. And 90% were seronegative. And they were also fairly well educated if you look at the education groupings. Two-thirds of our sample had at least some college education. Now, in terms of where we found men, gay bars ended up being our most successful recruitment spot, but we did have a lot of success both at the bathhouses and through the internet. We only went to one house ball event, and there were, as you might imagine, not a ton of people there, but we had a fairly good response rate from the young folks who were there, so we got about 29 folks from the house ball. So when we asked a little bit more about the context of these men's sexual behaviors. So in the past 90 days, where have you met folks that you have been sexually active with? The internet ended up being much more common than, say, phone chat lines. In fact, very few people at all used phone chat lines, which I think is probably something that phone chat line companies are very upset about, and they would, I assume, blame the internet. Cruising spots were not very prevalent. Gay bars and bathhouses were. And as you can see from the numbers, we have 186 men on the internet, 149 at the gay bar, and then the bathhouse. So men were going to multiple venues and meeting partners at multiple venues. It wasn't just that, a participant would say, well, I only go to the internet, or I only go to cruising spots. When we look at HIV screening behaviors, The majority of our sample had been screened, so about half, you know, within the past year, as well as, if not just the past year, over a year ago. So it was a pretty good response in terms of these were men that were conscious of HIV testing resources and had availed themselves of them. When you look at STI testing other than HIV in the past year, and I apologize, this graph is a little bit misleading in that it looks like there's a big difference between yes and no just because it's numbers. When you look at the percentages, it's about 54% had been tested for STIs, so only a little bit more than half. So 46% of our participants had not been tested for STIs over the previous year. And we found fairly low STI diagnoses within the previous years. You know, the initial idea behind the project was finding a higher incidence of syphilis, and yet we did not find very many cases of syphilis diagnoses among the men who filled out our survey. Gonorrhea was about three times more likely. And this, we surmised that this might be because of those relatively low STI testing rates within, you know, the past year or so, that this may not actually be, you know, diagnoses is not the same as actual incidence, so there may be some connection there. So overall, HIV testing was really pretty high among this group of men. You know, the community-based organizations that were doing this work, their messages about HIV testing and access to testing, it seemed as if they were getting out there and that men were receiving them and taking action. As I said, STI incidence was pretty low the previous 2 years, and again, that, you know, there's always the number you get versus the number that is, and so we can't really say whether STI diagnoses in the population might be higher than what we recorded. But if so, that might be a place for some targeted messages around STI testing in particular. We found that men were accessing multiple venues to find sexual partners, which coincided with, you know, some of our what we knew about the context of Indianapolis and the lack of a real sort of centralized place for men to meet each other, that something like you know, a gay bar, which brings folks specifically together, or using internet-based chat rooms. So that context made sense. And in thinking about interventions that would come out of this project, that these messages may need to be sort of all-encompassing. So you want to have the same messages at the gay bars and at the bathhouse and on the internet. So they're going to have to change based on context, but that you're going to have to employ them in multiple spaces. So we found, really, based on what's going on in Indiana, that respondent-driven sampling just didn't work for us. Our context, you know, and it had nothing to do with the strength of the methodology, but based on, you know, the place that this project was happening, it didn't work for us. And we thought maybe that might have to do with the fact that we didn't find a really close-knit community where social networks might have been as easily able to be used for finding participants. There's also the thought that men might not be active participants in quote-unquote at-risk communities, meaning that social norms may not be based around what we term risky behaviors, but that doesn't really say anything about what individual men's sexual behaviors are. And that the possibility of using a hybrid design may work in a context like Indiana. So for practitioners who are working in areas that we would term low gay-specific resource areas, that outreach efforts may need to be concentrated in the venues in which men report finding sexual partners. Of course, again, because this is CVPR, it's going to vary by context, by resource availability, and the work that folks are already doing. Gay bars were definitely still a useful outreach site for targeting men who have sex with men. I mean, some of the possible drawbacks of that are reaching those folks who have already been reached. You know, it's not a big conceptual leap to think if you want to find men who are looking for other men as sexual partners, the gay bars might be a good place to look. And so thinking about, you know, saturation of messages and using the same venues over and over. And our sample was pretty low in STI diagnoses, predominantly white and well-educated, which may be an indicator of those men that tend to visit gay bars. And so therefore, they wouldn't necessarily be the only venue in which that might be useful for sampling. So for researchers in low gay-specific resource areas, we think that something that might be needs more exploration is how specifically these kind of fractured community resources affect particular behaviors related to HIV or STI infection, additional venues in which men may be using to find sexual partners, and this idea of sexual community participation. So what are the social norms that men are engaging in based on their peers? What's kind of the social context in which men, you know, find each other when they're looking for other men to have sex with, and thinking about to what degree the people you're looking for maybe participate in a larger community in terms of their social and sexual experiences. So, of course, I want to acknowledge our community partners, the Stamp Out Syphilis Coalition and the Marion County Health Department. Got some references if you need them afterwards, and I will now turn it over to the next presenter. Thank you.